This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Good morning and welcome to Community Connection. Today we have with us Les Meninga. He's with East Central Illinois EMS, and he's going to tell us some good information. Les, this is a week to celebrate. Let's start with that.
Yes, Laura. Well, we're getting ready to kick off EMS Week, which is May 21st through 27th. It started in 1974 with President Ford, who wanted to recognize people that are doing the emergency medical stuff out in the community. And it was a way to recognize them and bring the communities together with them.
You know, I can't imagine, but I kind of can. My brother was at EMS for a while, and he was talking about some of the different things that happen, talking about having to make those decisions in those pressure types of moments. So yes, thank you very much for what you do and all the people who work with EMS services. I can't imagine that's an easy job. And I guess I just want to say, what made you want to be involved?
Well, it can be stressful, but it can also be very rewarding. Initially, when I got involved in 1993, it was probably looking for the adrenaline rush that comes along with that as well. But that came to a very rapid stop in the very beginning. My very first EMS run on the ambulance was for my grandfather, who was having chest pain. So ended up being a good outcome. He did have to have some surgery, but I realized very early on that this could have a very large impact with patients' lives. And sometimes being in small communities, you have the opportunity and the privilege, I consider, to work on people that you may know and even loved ones. So knowing that we can make a difference, that's what really drew me to the career path that I have.
Mm-hmm. And you're working with East Central Illinois EMS. Tell us what that is.
Well, our department is part of OSF Healthcare out of Urbana. We provide medical direction, resources, and education to the different medical providers, EMRs, which used to be called first responder, EMTs, paramedics, pre-hospital RNs. We do have nurses that go on and continue their education to be able to work on an ambulance or a helicopter, and also our emergency communication nurses, which are nurses that receive the radio calls in the emergency departments. So we provide the protocols, the oversight, education for all those different levels. And they can be paid, they can be volunteer, they can be on fire departments, transport ambulance services, which are paid and volunteer. So it's all over the place. And just mm-hmm. in Vermilion County, we work with about 12 different agencies in Vermilion County as well.
Mm-hmm. So what is the continuing education piece of it?
The continuing education is really directly tied to their certification and their licensure. They're required over a certain amount of time frame for the state licensure every 4 years. They have to maintain certain amount and certain topics of education. So we provide that education for them so they can maintain their licensure and certification. And the initial education, some people need a place to start, and we provide those classes as well.
Mm-hmm. So how do you become an EMS? What's the first step there?
I would encourage somebody, if they have the thought that they want to get into EMS, is reach out to their local department. Go do a visit. Go to their station. Are they volunteer? Are they paid? Some of them offer ride time ability, where you can hop on for a shift and ride along and see what they do, to see if it's something that you're willing to invest your time into before you make that decision. If you have that decided that you want to pursue this as a career, then you would reach out to an office like mine and let us know your interest. We would get you on a contact list. And when we have a class available, we would let you know, and then you could come take the class and get started.
Mm-hmm. Is there a fee associated with it?
There is. For the EMR course, that one's about $255. That does range throughout the country and the area. Different agencies charge different prices. EMT class, it ranges anywhere from about $500 to $1,000, sometimes a little bit more depending on where you're at. Also to keep in mind, with once you get into EMT class, there's clinical requirements as well. So you would have to do some time on an ambulance and as well as the emergency department. And in the paramedic course, that one's a little bit longer. That one's about 15 to 18 months. And that one is about $6,000 to take that course.
Mm-hmm. So the difference between the paramedic and the EMT is what?
The education. EMT class is typically about a semester, just a few months. The paramedic class is, the EMT class is about 200 hours total. The paramedic class is about 1600 to 1700 hours and about 15 to 18 months, depending on your clinical time that you have. So there's a lot more education. The advanced procedures, advanced medications are all included in the paramedic. So they're working under protocols out in the field. We could be in the middle of nowhere, and it can be pretty stressful. So we got to make sure we give them the training to help impact somebody's life.
Definitely. Well, let's take our first break, and we'll be back in just a moment to continue the conversation. Welcome back to Community Connection. We are speaking with Les Meninga from East Central Illinois EMS. And Les, you were just telling us the differences between the paramedic and the EMT. So on each ambulance that is sent out, is there a combination of people that are typical for that run?
Yes, it does depend on the different service. Some of them, if it's considered a basic service, they will have two EMT basics on board. They have the basic level equipment on board, some medications, the AED, the automated external defibrillator to help with cardiac arrest. Our paramedic level agencies, they will have at minimum a paramedic and an EMT, sometimes two paramedics, and they can do advanced airway. They can do the IV therapy. They can also do the advanced cardiology, doing 12 leads, seeing if somebody's having a heart attack, being able to transport them to an appropriate facility.
Okay, good information. So I had someone on, I think it was our ambulances for Ukraine that was associated with OSF, and they were talking about there's a way to have shared services, something you can sign up. Oh, no, you know, that was for the AED. Never mind. Maybe you know about that. I'm going somewhere. I jumped in that rabbit hole and went off with it.
No problem.
Never mind that question. Forget it. So what's the need look like now for people to be in the field?
The lead as far as time frame?
I'm sorry, the need as far as the number of people working.
Almost every agency is showing some sort of staffing shortage, even volunteers. When I started in the 1993 time frame, everybody wanted to volunteer. Everybody enjoyed that. We've seen that decline. We're trying to identify areas where we can improve that, but also in the paid full-time front. Every agency has a staffing crisis that we're constantly trying to do more classes to get more initial education out there to help build that up. We as EMS is sometimes a big stepping stone in the Champaign market. We have a lot of students that come through ENT class that are actually pre-med to become physicians. And this is a way for them to get some patient contact hours. And over the years, we have really knocked out some really great physicians that are working out in the communities. And in fact, our medical director was one of those, Dr. Kurt Bloomstrand. And I know at the other hospital, Carl, their medical directors are both students that had been local with U of I. So it's pretty impressive to see what can come out of these classes as well. But it's still a stepping stone. And when they go on to further their education or go to a different career path, it does leave us short. And we just need to continuously backfill that. So everybody's looking. So if you're interested in it, definitely a way to go.
Mm-hmm. So what type of personality do you need to have to be in this type of work?
I don't know if there's one really good personality. We need to be able to listen, because when we assess our patients, we need to listen to their complaint. I think we've all experienced that in our lives when we go to the doctor's office and we're getting checked up. We're trying to tell them our story, and if they're not listening to us, we get frustrated. So we definitely have to be able to listen, but we have to have a strong personality to deal with some of the difficult things we encounter in the world. Some Calls may be difficult personality wise with if somebody's intoxicated or they're frustrated with maybe what we're trying to do. And we have to be a pretty strong personality. That's for sure.
Definitely. So what about pros and cons? I think I just heard a couple of the cons, but what would you say pros and cons of the job are?
Pros, the ability to make a difference. Really, even if it's a stranger, we do have many interstates that go through the different response areas between Interstate 74, 72, and 57. You know, we can meet people from out of state all the time, even if somebody's in town visiting. We do have the colleges in both areas. So we're always meeting new people. That's definitely a pro. Every day is a different adventure. We do have some calls that may typically be the same, but almost every call is a different adventure. So there is still that adrenaline side. When the pager goes off, we do get excited to go on to that next call. So that's a pro. Some of the cons, well, the stress that we have to learn how to deal with to build resiliency. Mental health is always in our forefront with our providers and making sure we're paying attention to that to keep them happy, keep them well. If it goes on too long, they can become ill, and we don't want that. Over time, we hear responders talk about the times that they miss with their family, you know, holidays, birthdays, graduations, volunteers getting called in the middle of the night, waking up their sleep cycle to go on a call. And it's just some of the stress that we need to learn how to deal with and build that resiliency.
So when a call comes in, how is it decided? When someone calls 911, how is that call routed?
So when somebody calls 911, it'll go to their local dispatch agency. In Vermilion County, it would go to the public safety building. The dispatcher, the telecommunicator, would take that call, and they would get the address, see where it's at, and then they have different service areas, the agencies do, and then they would dispatch the appropriate agency to that call. Sometimes there might be a tiered response. If it's just a fire department with EMRs, the emergency medical responders, they would dispatch them. And then most of those departments would have agreements with an ambulance service to be dispatched with them. And then they would respond in as well. Sometimes if it's a basic ambulance, they may call for an intercept from an advanced agency to come in and assist with them and maybe even meet them on the side of the road. So if you see sometimes an ambulance sitting on the side of the road and another one behind them, they're probably doing an intercept, getting a paramedic on board to be able to do some advanced meds or assessment or other treatments.
Okay. Well, that's good information. Let's take our last break and then we'll come back and finish the show. Welcome back to Community Connection this morning. We have with us today Les Meninga from East Central Illinois EMS, and he was talking about a lot of different things as far as being involved with the job and what it takes to do that, as well as the education. So, Les, how many years did you tell me you had?
This is my 30th year. 1993 Wow. is when I started.
So did you see it playing out like this?
I don't know if I've seen it playing out quite like this, but I did decide to make it a career, and it was exciting to look back and know that out of the EMT class that I took, it was actually EMTA at the time for ambulance. I'm the only one that's still in EMS and made a career out of it. So it was pretty exciting to look back.
Like, so there you go, right? I'm still hanging in there. Well, again, thank you for your service. I can't even imagine. You know, one of the things we hear a lot about today is Narcan. Can you tell us what your involvement with that would be?
Yeah, Narcan's kind of a big deal in the communities right now. The U.S. does have a crisis with opioids, and it seems like there's a surge trying to get a better heroin out there, mixing with fentanyl and stuff. Unfortunately, over time, this has gotten pretty bad to where we're now doing community Narcan training and providing Narcan to the community to help basically save a life. The government has really got involved with providing grant money to help fund this. We are actually what's known as a drug overdose prevention program in the state of Illinois. So we've provided our training to law enforcement in many counties in this area, including Danville PD and Vermilion County Sheriff's Office, help train them and provide them with naloxone and Narcan to be able to reverse overdoses in the presence of an opioid. It won't fix the overall crisis. Well, we understand that, but if we can get there soon enough and somebody in an overdose state, it could save their life, and that's our goal. Well, we've trained over 300 officers since 2016. We've had probably close to 200 different administrations of naloxone by just law enforcement. That's not even counting EMS agencies, just in law enforcement. Public health in all the counties are doing a really good job. They actually have a coalition called PROMPT, and they all work together to be able to provide education to the community as well. So somebody could go to the public health department and ask for some Narcan to have at home if they have a loved one or a family member that's struggling with addiction and they're concerned about them coming home and finding them overdosed. They can get Narcan and be able to do a reversal as well. Mm-hmm. So it is sad. I know there's a lot of community, paradigm thought process on that. A lot of people don't agree with it, and they feel that maybe it's enabling people that are addicted to the opioids to continue on. But where we really need to look at it is it's helping save lives. You know, give them the opportunity to seek help and get that fixed, because addiction is a pretty strong animal that they're fighting. So we just want to be able to give them a chance to make that right and get that fixed.
Definitely. So Les, when you happen upon a situation, how do you know if it's an overdose?
Well, if it's an opioid overdose, we're typically going to see paraphernalia. There may be a syringe, you know, the rubber tourniquets on their arms, hardware, burnt spoons. The drug itself may be there present. It could be pills. They're going to be unresponsive or have altered mental status, very sleepy. They're slowing their breathing down. And that's what an opioid does. It actually connects to a receptor in the brain, and it slows the signals down to the diaphragm. So their breathing slows way down, which causes their pulse rate to go down. They may even be blue. Those are the people that we're going to give the Narcan to help reverse that. If we feel it's something else, if it, you know, as an example, cocaine, that would speed everything up, or methamphetamine, they would be very cherry red and everything would be sped up. With an opioid, everything slows down and we need to get that reversed.
Mm-hmm. So I actually went through the Narcan training, but it's been several years, so my memory is not the greatest on it. But it seems to me like they said that. I had the type of that I saw, was that the type you squirted in the nose?
Yep.
Is that what it is?
Yep. There's really three different ways that can be administered. The first one being the intranasal, which is the most common that we train the community and the law enforcement to do. It's very simple. We have a little white atomizer, really, that you just put it up to one side of the nose, you push it, and it sprays it into the nose. Another way would be an injection with a needle. Sometimes the public health department, depending on what the availability is of the medication, may train the community to do the injection in the leg. And then also for EMS, we can do it via IV, where we'd start an IV in an arm and give it that way. But the most common, what we're seeing right now, is the nasal administration. So it's very simple. It's safe. We don't have to worry about somebody getting stuck with a needle as well.
Mm-hmm. And my understanding was that, if I was wrong, if it wasn't that overdose, that spray is not going to hurt anything.
Correct. There's no real side effects to giving that if they were not overdosing from an opioid. It would kind of be like squirting water in their nose. So as long as we're not looking, and we're covered under the Good Samaritan law, when bystanders or even the community administers Narcan, they're not liable. As long as they're, you know, working in to help the patient and not want to do any willful or wanton misconduct, they're covered under the Good Samaritan law.
Les, you are full of information. I'm so glad I'm talking to you today. I really, you've got great information, so thank you. Yeah. How can we as the public help you?
Whenever you see the EMS crews, you know, out there in the community, just tell them thank you and recognize them. That's probably the good start right there. Sometimes we feel it's a thankless job, but I know it's not. You know, we just need to give praises every now and then. And if somebody is interested in pursuing this, definitely reach out to our office, reach out to your local fire or EMS agency, volunteer or paid. They know how to contact the different EMS systems that provide the same service I do. So if somebody's hearing this and you want to get started, reach out. Our number is 217-359-6619. But feel free to go to your local fire department or rescue squad and talk to them. Ask questions.
Mm-hmm. And I liked what you said at the very beginning, that we had the opportunity, you know, maybe just to see what it was like, to see if it was something we would be interested in before you actually go into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, good information today, Les. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Les is with East Central Illinois EMS, Les Meninga. Good information. Any last thoughts?
I appreciate you having me on, and look forward to phone calls.
Okay, so everyone, if you're listening, you know, we know you're listening, and we want you to, you know, think about becoming involved. Great opportunity. And, you know, if that's really not your gig, if you're thinking about it and you're thinking, no, you know, the whole Narcan thing, that's just huge. And, you know, Les gave us really good information on that. So that's something that you need to consider, especially if you're around a population that may be using. We need to make sure that we're ready to act. Again, a simple squirt in the nose. It's like yep. I'm thinking about my Flonase. Yep. That's literally all it is.
That's what it's like. So it's very simple to do, and it could help. It could reverse an overdose and prevent somebody from dying. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, Les, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. Audience, thank you for listening today. We'll be back tomorrow with another great show. Until then, have a great rest of the day.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.